Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, June 18th, 2011. This is episode 779. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk about tech. Yes, it is. I know. Quick. Change your channel, Martha. I don't want to hear about that stuff. I'm sure there's a gardening show somewhere else. But this is the show where we talk about cell phones and home theater. And, I guess a little computer and internet stuff, too. Phone number, if you want to call in, I'd love to hear from you. This is the easy version, the easy-to-remember version, 8888-ASK-LEO, 8888-ASK-LEO. But if you like numbers, if you're alphabetically challenged, 1-888-827-5536. It's actually pretty easy to remember, 8888-ASK-LEO. Or you can go to the website, techguylabs.com, and that's got the number, it's got links to the video, the audio, the questions, the answers, the show notes, all that stuff. You can download shows. We have, this is 779, so that means there's 778 shows on there. You can, if you missed a show over the last 7 years, you can go back. Seven and a half now. So that's techguylabs.com. Let's see, what happened this week? It was such a busy week last week with Apple's announcements and the Microsoft Windows 8 announcement and so forth. It feels like it was a calm week this week. Oh, this is the week that the Senate bill was introduced by Amy. How do you pronounce this? Let me ask the Minnesotans. Is it Klobuchar? Klobuchar? Senator Amy Klobuchar, from a Democrat from Minnesota, introduced a bill to amend the criminal penalty provision for the criminal infringement of a copyright. Basically, this bill means that if you are caught lip-syncing on YouTube, you could get 10 years in jail. 10 years in jail. The following organizations support this bill. You just guess. My parent organization, the National Association of Broadcasters, they like it. The National Association of Newspapers, the Motion Picture Association of America, the Business Software Alliance, the Association of American Publishers, NBC, the American Federation of Musicians, the Directors Guild of America. They all want you to get 10 years. AFTRA, my union, shame on you. Shame on you, AFTRA. The Screen Actors Guild, Viacom, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I mean, it's a Sony, CBS, Reed Elsevier, they publish books, Time Warner, Universal Music, Walt Disney. Who's opposed to this? A couple of groups that you'd never heard of. The USWGO and Demand Progress. Let me tell you something, folks. These people will do anything because they think that you and me and every single one of their consumers are thieves. And they're robbing them blind. They're the equivalent of a grocery store owner who puts up cameras on the apples out front and maybe even electrifies them just in case. Because I know you kids will steal them. They want you to have 10 years in federal prison for doing things like lip syncing on YouTube. You know, what have we come to? You know, the irony of all this is because Walt Disney made all of their money, remember, on taking fairy tales and making movies out of them, taking public domain works. And this is actually how most artists work. They take the culture that we grew up in, the public domain, some people call it the commons. The cultural milieu that we grew up in, and they create new stuff from it. Nobody creates in a vacuum. Nobody, not even a scientist, not an artist, not a painter, not a movie maker, a musician. We all create based on what has come before. Walt Disney is a perfect example. Even Mickey Mouse, it turns out, wasn't made out of whole cloth. He was essentially ripped off from a character that came out a year before in movies. But what's interesting is that Disney, as soon as they created Cinderella and Snow White and Mickey Mouse, became very active in protecting them. And this is the problem. We have two different groups here. We have you and me, society, who benefits from the fact that stuff, artistic creations are out there that we can build upon, that the commons exists. And then we have these creators, these content creators who've made theirs. They've done their building upon what exists, and now they want to make darn sure that nobody does it again. They want to pull up the ladder after they get on the board. And unfortunately, you know, there's a pendulum that swings back and forth. We have copyright law, trademark law, patent law, all of which is designed to protect the content creators for a limited time so that they can reap the benefits of their creation. Look, I create content. I want to make money on my content. I need to make a living. Everybody needs, every musician, every artist, every filmmaker needs to make a living, every writer. I don't begrudge them that. I'm not saying that. But the idea of these laws is to protect them for a limited time, and then stuff goes into the public domain so others can benefit and build upon what they've created. Unfortunately, what's happened is that money speaks so powerfully in Congress these days. The campaign contributions, really we have a government run by these contributions. And as a result, these content creators who have a lot more money than we do as a society get members of Congress like Amy Klobuchar to create bills that overprotect them, that go too far, that swing the pendulum too far in favor of content creators. In fact, we call the copyright law these days the Walt Disney Protection Act, because every time the Mickey Mouse copyright starts to run out, Disney runs to a Congress critter and says, hey, can you extend that copyright law a little longer? So it's very interesting. When was Mickey Mouse created? 24, 27? Everything created since that day that Mickey Mouse was created is in copyright now. There is no public domain from that point forward because Congress continues to extend copyright so that it doesn't run out, so that Walt Disney continues to own Mickey Mouse. The pendulum has swung so far in the other direction. So far, in fact, that, you know, there's a great application from the British Library on the iPhone and the iPad that is 19th century works. And it's just fabulous. You can read, I think it's 60,000 books. And they have them scanned in. They're beautiful. It's like having a library of 19th century literature on your iPad. It's wonderful. You'll never see one from the 20th century because of Walt Disney and a compliant Congress. They can do it only with stuff pre-1924. And I think I think we as a society need to say, wait a minute, there's a benefit to society to having stuff be in the public domain. That's how new stuff gets created. You're pulling up the ladder. You're saying, no, we got ours. We're going to keep it forever. And now, 10 years in federal prison if this law should go forward. Now, I hope it won't. And if you want to know more, read about Senate Bill 978, S-978. You can go to somewhere like govtrack.us and read about the bill and who supports it and who's putting money behind it. We'll see what happens. I think it's so draconian that I hope that organizations step forward and people like you and me step forward. Because, you know, the truth is money only matters in Congress when the voters don't care. Because what is money about? It's about getting votes. So any Congress critter is going to pay much more attention if thousands of constituents write to her or him and say, hey, this is a bad idea, than if they get tens of thousands of dollars from corporate interests. Because those tens of thousands of dollars are really all about just buying votes. So let's go to the source. That's you and me. Let's write to our member of Congress and say, hey, maybe it's time the pendulum swings a little bit in our favor. Yeah, it's fine. I agree. Copyright, protect, but not forever. What do you think? 888-ASK-LEO. We could talk about this. 888-ASK-LEO. The lines are open. I'm Leo Laporte, Big Tech Guy. Is that Suzanne Vega? Or is somebody who sounds a lot like her?
Ashley Simpson.
Ashley Simpson. They sound exactly the same.
Lip-syncing this on SNL.
She was lip-syncing this on Saturday Night Live, huh?
On SNL, like 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. 10 years in prison, Ashley. No, you're allowed to lip-sync your own song. It's somebody else's song. You'd think Google would be on that list of companies trying to fight this law. But, Google, you know, they're not. And there's a real reason. YouTube, of course, who benefits greatly from lip sync videos, is really, really cautious not to go against the content creators. They have also bent over backwards, swung the pendulum way far in the favor of content creators. They're so afeared of them. They don't have to be. They're actually protected under the copyright law as a common carrier. This is a strange little loophole, but it makes sense. If you're the phone company, you're not, and this is historically the case, you're not held liable for criminal acts committed on phone calls. You know, somebody says, hey, let's kidnap that Leo Laporte and make money on ransom. On the phone company's not liable. They're a common carrier. They transmitted the illegal act, but they didn't, in fact, you know, support or aid and abet it. They're protected. And that is the protection. They call it the safe harbor protection that YouTube has, according to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. They are treated not as a publisher, but as a carrier. That's an important distinction. If you are a magazine and you publish an article that's illegal, you're liable because you're a publisher. So the real question is YouTube a publisher of videos? Or merely a common carrier like the phone company? And you can make the argument both ways. In fact, I think Google's very sensitive to the fact that you could say because YouTube makes money off those videos, they put ads next to them, they're publishing them. And so in that respect, they're very much like a magazine. The argument on the other side is, yes, but there are 24 hours of video uploaded every minute to YouTube. Who could possibly vet everything? In that respect, they are a carrier just because it's not physically possible without hiring hundreds of thousands of employees to vet everything. So what Google has done is they have really kind of adhered to the letter of the law on this. If anybody complains about any video, they immediately pull it down. And there's a review process, but it's an automated review process. And they have automated bots that look at every video and look for copyrighted material. The copyright holders provide them, I believe, provide them with fingerprints that they can look for. And if they see that fingerprint, they pull it down. They pull it down at the drop of a hat. I've had many videos pulled down from YouTube because of perceived copyright violation. And it's difficult. You can appeal, but it's a process. It takes a while. And unfortunately, most of the videos I put on YouTube are very topical because mostly what I do is topical tech news. And so as a result, by the time that's all gone through, it's kind of useless. We've already lost all the views we're going to get. But that's YouTube's way of saying, well, yeah, we're a carrier, but we're not going to take any chances. And the Digital Millennium Copyright Act does say you have safe harbor as long as you have you adhere to our takedown. It's all swung way in the favor of the content creators. And as a content creator, you know, I understand why we need to protect our means of making a living, but not at a huge cost to society. 8888-ASK-LEO. Enough. I'm getting down off the soapbox to say hi to Misty in Los Angeles. Caller one on our show today. Hi, Misty.
Hello. Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
I have a small business. Thank you. I have a small business, and I need to buy some accounting and tax software, and I don't want to use QuickBooks. I was told to buy WinFiler by Greatland, but it's PC software, and I am a Mac user. I've never used a PC before. So I have a one-year-old MacBook Pro, and I'm wondering, should I buy a new PC just to run this software, or should I set up boot camp on my Mac and then buy a copy of Windows?
So I'm not sure why they said don't use QuickBooks. That's, in fact, what I use in my business, and that does run
because
on a Mac.
I found it really complicated. I actually bought a copy of it and was so lost, and I spoke to an accountant, and he said that this other software is much easier for somebody who's completely 100% in the dark on how to do any of this.
This is one area where the Mac, and I am a Mac fan, but where the Mac has a little bit lagged behind. Traditionally, business apps are on Windows because most businesses use Windows. However, there are a number of good accounting apps that are Mac native. Do you do your own taxes, or you use an accountant for the taxes?
No, I'm not doing my own taxes. I'm trying to pay taxes. My husband has one employee, and so I'm trying to file 941s and so forth. And I'm doing it by hand. And when I ran into trouble, I went to the IRS. And the IRS woman that I waited 5 hours to speak with told me that she hadn't seen anyone try to do a 941 by hand in 13 years.
Yeah, every business automates it. We, as soon as I had a payroll, I started using a payroll service. There are a number of them. We use ADP, I think, right now, but Paychex is another one. And that's because it's just so much easier to do it that way. But I understand and I applaud your desire to do it for yourself. If you, the truth is you should choose the software, not the hardware. So find the program. If a CPA says this is good, or you try it and you like it, find the program you like. The good news is it is easy to run Windows on a Mac. There's two ways to do it, as you know already. There is Boot Camp, which you mentioned, which really turns your one-year-old Mac laptop into a Windows laptop. You'll actually start up in Windows. The other way to do it, which for accounting software is probably more than adequate, the only reason you want to start up in Windows is for maximum performance. And to be honest, accounting software is not very demanding. So you also could do it in what we call emulation, which is you continue to run OS X, but you run software that allows you to run Windows software on top of OS X. And there's a number of ways to do that. There's a free one from Sun Microsystems. I guess it's now Oracle, isn't it? Called VirtualBox, that I like a lot. You can look for that, VirtualBox. I think it's virtualbox.org. But you can Google VirtualBox and find it. And then there's two commercial programs that I use also. VMware makes one called Fusion, and there's one called Parallels. All three roughly equal in terms of accounting software, again, which is not very demanding. So I think they're very good choices. And you'll find it's exactly like running Windows. You don't have to leave your Mac. Now, here's the negative. You've got to buy Windows. You have to have a Windows license.
Which Windows do I buy?
Oh, you're just going to buy Windows 7, 32-bit. Okay. Yeah, just get the latest one.
Okay. Apple told me to buy 64-bit.
It's fine. Either one's fine. I would do 32-bit just to maximize compatibility with whatever software you want to run. Not all software like 64-bit. I think what Apple's saying is it will run 64-bit, but there's no reason to run 64-bit. There's no compelling reason. I would just, you're not going to use more than 4 gigs of RAM in your virtual machine anyway. So that's the only reason.
There's so many Windows 7s. I just go in and say, I want Windows 7.
Windows 7 Home is fine. Home Premium. Home. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, Misty. Yeah, I wish I had a better recommendation for Mac accounting software. Maybe somebody does. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. Well, normally, Scott Wilkinson shows up on Sundays on the Tech Guy Show, but he was here all last Sunday, so I thought it'd be fun to give the Saturday crew a chance to get their home theater questions answered and their home theater fix. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
Thank you so much for filling in on Sunday.
Oh, I had such a blast. I it was just wonderful. Listen, anytime you want to take a vacation, just let me know.
By the way, I know that you played a lot of tuba music on Sunday from Scott. Well,
I played a lot of different kind of music.
But all of which you played on, right?
That's most of which. There was one example. I had a couple of really great guests on. I had the composer for the score for X-Men First Class.
Neat.
So when he came on, I played a bit of that score. But most of the bumper music was stuff that I have played on. Because I wanted to give people a chance to hear that other part of my life, which is actually, I've been a musician far longer than I've been a journalist.
Scott played seashell trumpet on that piece we just heard.
On the piece we just heard, it was a clip from the movie White Squall, directed by Ridley Scott, starring Jeff Bridges. Ooh. And the music was written by my good friend Jeff Rona.
Neat.
And so I thought, you know, it'll be fun to play a little bit of that and... So, yeah, seashell trumpet, you know, like the Fiji Islanders.
Is it made? It's like a conch?
It's a real conch, yeah, absolutely. Wow. One I made, actually. I mean, I didn't make the conch. I, you know, got it and cut off the end and drilled a little hole and, you know, wow. You blow it like a trumpet.
Wow. That is really neat.
So I had a wonderful time, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
So Scott's day job, unfortunately, as is often the case, artists have to have a day job. Scott's day job is editor-in-chief of the Ultimate. It's not a bad job. Editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine. He's also a columnist for Home Theater Mag and is our home theater expert. So there.
It isn't a bad day job. In fact, I love my day job.
It's a good mix, actually.
It is. I get to listen to music, too. In fact, I just got invited next week to hear Jeff Bridges at the Troubadour in L.A. So,
what was Jeff doing?
Singing? Singing and playing.
Really? You know, the dude sings?
Yeah, he does. He was in, what was the name of that movie?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Actually, he was quite good at all his own music. Yeah, he was quite good at that. I forgot that. That's right.
Yeah, I forget the name of the movie now, sadly. But anyway, I'm going to go hear him week after next. So
Crazy Heart. Thank you.
Crazy Heart. That's it. Yep.
Marmot in the chat room. I tell you, my brain, the synapses are a little bit slow. But it never misses a question.
Hey, I got to tell you, when I was on the air last week and I was watching the chat room, and boy, oh boy, did they help me out on more than one occasion.
They're fantastic.
They are amazing. So thank you so much.
We've really discovered a new way of thinking, and it's it's the hive mind.
Exactly. Yeah. Although we're better than the Borg.
I don't know. Resistance is futile. So let's see. What do you got for us? A question from a reader, I think.
I do have a question from a reader or a listener, probably a listener, because he says, thanks for all your work on Leo's show. This is Paul in Montgomery, Alabama. And he's got a very interesting question. He's got a Panasonic TV, a V25, an excellent TV, by the way. And he's got several devices like a Roku and a TiVo. And so on. And he's got them all hooked up to his receiver, which is a Denon receiver, I think, by HDMI. And then he's got an HDMI cable running out to his TV. All is well. Looks like that's great. He says, but when I go to the TV to listen to the apps on the TV, like Netflix, for example, he doesn't hear any audio. So how do you solve this problem? Well, that's a really good question, because
now the audio is not coming from the Denon.
Right.
It's coming from the TV.
Right. And he's got his TV speakers turned off so that he can hear the sound of the Denon and the multi-channel surround system.
I think a TV that good would probably have an audio out jack.
Exactly. And in fact, it has undoubtedly a digital audio out, probably an optical, or what we sometimes call Toslink. And what the easy solution is to take an optical audio cable, which you can get just about anywhere, you know, Radio Shack or Fry's or wherever, take it, plug it into the back of the TV to the optical digital audio output, and run that to your receiver, to one of the unused inputs. Now, and then when you're watching apps on the TV, simply switch your receiver to that input, whatever input it happens to be associated with, and you'll be able to hear the audio just fine. Now, he also has this Roku XD box, so I must admit, I just saw that, and I'm wondering, well, why isn't he watching the online content from there? But it could very well be that some of the content that he wants to watch from online sources is available on the Panasonic TV, but not on the Roku.
It's, you know, it's fine. Everybody has Netflix nowadays.
Just about,
But then there's other stuff. So
Exactly. And not only that, I was very surprised to learn this some weeks ago when Barb Gonzalez was on my podcast, that even if you have Netflix on this device and that device and another device, the three experiences when you watch it on each of those is going to be different.
Really? How is that?
Well, the quality is different. The user interface is different.
Yeah.
Because the app that they develop for the Roku box is different than the app they developed for the TV.
Oh, that's interesting.
So the experience is different, and I find that difficult to understand. I mean, you can understand it.
Well, there's a standard Netflix UI, but there's an older version and a newer version. I know when I got my Google TV at first, it had Netflix 1.0, which was really unusable. But it's been my experience that there is a kind of a standard Netflix interface. I guess they could have rewritten that in the TV.
They might have.
Something
they
different
might very
that
well have
maybe
that.
He prefers.
You know, he might prefer the one on the TV.
Yeah.
Or there might be something in the TV that he can't get through Roku.
Right. Anyway, so, we don't have to question his motives.
No.
Merely explain how to do it.
Grab an optical cable, very cheap, and plug it back in. Now, I have to say, I was going to do a little research on this. There's something in HDMI 1.4, which he seems to have all around, which is called audio return channel. And if the TV implements this, I don't know if it does, it would actually allow the TV to send audio back through the HDMI cable that is typically used to send its stuff.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. It could actually send audio back to the receiver. But A, the TV has to have that capability.
So,
and B, the receiver has to have the capability to receive it into what is otherwise an HDMI output.
So I always think of HDMI as one direction, unidirectional. But I guess the newer HDMI has two directions.
With HDMI 1.4, the latest version, it has this thing called audio return channel. It also has Ethernet over HDMI, which lets you do basically Ethernet networking, which is certainly bidirectional. So that is in only the latest version of HDMI. And I have to say, I don't remember whether the VT25 Panasonic Plasma has that or not. I guess I might suspect not, because it's last year.
What's your favorite TV these days? We got about 30 seconds. I just thought
my favorite TV these days is the Panasonic VT25.
Interesting. It's a plasma or an LCD?
It's a plasma. Absolutely. Okay. It's the one that Lisa in your
my CEO bought.
Your CEO bought was a VT25, and we did a comparison of all the 2011 models, the 3D models anyway, the ST30. GT30 and VT30 against the VT25, last year's top of the line, Tom Norton and I, and we actually liked the VT25 best of all.
Scott's the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine, ultimateavmag.com, columnist for Home Theater Mag, hometheatermag.com, and host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast, which is on my podcast network, every Monday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern at live.twit.tv. Who's coming up on Monday?
Monday I have Tile Hertzen, who is the editor of our newest website called innerfidelity.com, all about personal audio and headphones.
Yay! Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Awesome.
Thank you. That was great.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I appreciate your filling in again. That was and they love you at Premiere, and the audience loves you so. So that's great.
Well, thank you so much. I did get a lot of positive feedback.
Very good.
It was wonderful to meet his name is now escaping me.
Kyle?
Trevor.
Trevor. Oh, Trevor was there.
Trevor. Well, he wasn't there on the weekend, but I met him on Friday.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, Trevor's
and
great.
We walked around, and he's very good. And Kyle, of course, was great to meet him, and Aaron, the call screener.
Right.
And Kyle's great, man. Boy, what a great board op. I threw him a curve at the end. At the last minute of the show, I said, ooh, I'd like to play one more thing from my wife's CD where I'm playing blues trombone. And he didn't know. And he was scrambling.
He scrambles good, huh?
He scrambled good. He was great. So
good to remember.
My thanks to him, absolutely.
All right. Hey, thanks, Scott. Hey,
and happy Father's Day tomorrow.
You too. Well, actually.
Thanks. Not for me.
You're not a father.
I'm not a father.
Say happy Father's Day to your father.
I will.
All right. Take care, Scott.
Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
All right, Leo, live read here for Carbonite Consumer.
Thank you.
little John Williams music there.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel like I'm saving the world. One computer at a time. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Mary's in Apple Valley, our next caller. Hi, Mary. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Glad to do it. What can I do for you?
I hope you're well today.
I am very well, my dear.
Thank you. All of my questions relate to flash memory, okay? And I have an XMP3 satellite radio that has flash memory.
Oh, that's nice. So you could record shows or music right to the radio.
Right. That's what I listen to you on.
Excellent.
And it's a micro SD card slot that I've never used.
Right.
So, first question is, about the flash memory on an MP3 player, can you delete or erase one item or song or show recording, or do you have to erase everything by to its original factory settings, like I have to do on my satellite radio every 2 or 3 weeks? And
so here's the deal on that. Of course you can erase one thing at a time if the software has a command for it. There's nothing about flash memory that prevents you from doing that. But the XM radio software on there would have to let you to do it. I can't imagine it doesn't. It may not be obvious. You just have to dig through the menus to see.
It can erase things, but the memory becomes full, and eventually you have to erase everything.
Yeah, that's not a feature of flash. Flash is really, you could think of the flash as just like a hard drive.
Oh, well then, how do I download a show, if I've missed it, a talk show like yours, to the micro SD, the micro card on my radio?
So micro SD or SD is the same thing as flash. It's you have internal flash, which comes with the radio, probably a small, relatively small amount of that. And then you can add your own up to 32 gigabytes, I would guess, because that's the largest micro SD card out there, to it by buying an additional card. Now, audio is very small, so even if the internal memory is only 512 megabytes, that's hours and hours of music, or talk shows. So you may not need to get an external card. If you want to get a show after it's broadcast, then you can't use the radio to record it. You know, the radio has a VCR style feature to record stuff as you're listening to it. You'll have to go get the show from the radio station that aired it. Most stations and most shows now offer recorded shows that you can download. They're called podcasts. They're kind of misnamed podcasts because it implies you need an iPod. You don't. You can put them on your XM.
Well, do I go to where that is on their website and then click on that and that starts to download it to my computer, or is it going into the card?
Ah, okay. So if you found the podcast, for instance, all of my shows, all 778 of my shows are available on the website techguylabs.com. There's an audio section and you can get any one of them. You'll click them and they'll download to your computer as an MP3. Now, you're going to have to read the manual for your XM radio to see exactly what it needs. But in theory, when you get a card like an SD card, micro SD card, they almost always come with SD adapters that make them a full-size SD card. You put them in the adapter. And then you need a card reader. And your computer may have one built in. You'll just have to look. Many laptops do, many desktops do, or you can go out and buy an inexpensive card reader. You put that card in, and that card will show up on your desktop as a hard drive, as an external drive. And then you can just copy whatever you've downloaded onto that drive. Now, this is where I say you might want to read the manual, because it may have some specific rules about how those files have to be stored on that card. It may not just be able to read them if you just copy into the card. But that really does depend, absolutely depends, on the software in the radio. And I don't, you know, everything is different.
So do you listen to it on your computer or your radio?
You could do either. You could initially, when you get it, if you go to techguylabs.com and you click on the audio link and you click on a song or a show, you can actually just listen to it on your computer. It'll just start playing back. But if you want to put it on your radio, then you'll need to download the file. It'll be an MP3 file. And put it on the SD card. And then take the micro SD card out of the adapter and put it into your radio. try it. See if it play. See if you then can navigate to it on the radio. If it can't, then there may be some. It may need to be in a folder called show. I you know, it all depends. Every one of these is different. That you'll have to get the manual for your particular radio to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're really welcome. Thank you for going to all this effort to listen. I appreciate it. All of us radio talk show hosts, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, Mary. Yeah, this is one of the reasons podcasting is kind of stalled in the water, to be honest with you, is because it's so complicated. It's one of the reasons I do the live stream is all you have to do is go to live.twit.tv. It's a website, and it just starts playing. And that's a lot easier. But getting it on a portable device, that's tough. I wish we could make it easier. iTunes helps. You know, that's one of the reasons iPods outsell everything else, you know, several times, because the combination of iTunes and an iPod makes it pretty easy. Not as easy as it ought to be, but easier to listen to downloaded audio. It's just too hard right now. And it won't be as popular as radio until it's as easy as turning on the radio and pushing a button. Hey, before we get to the next call, I got a bunch of calls, but Hugh's our next caller from Oxnard. He says his neighbor's computer messes up his radio. I'll see if I can help on that one. Before we do that, I do want to talk a little bit about backup. This is such an important topic for everybody, and our great sponsor, Carbonite, has really solved this problem, making it easy to back up the right way. So what is the right backup? Well, it should be automatic. You shouldn't have to think about it, right? It should just happen. And it should back it up off-site. So that if the worst happens, if there's a fire, flood, earthquake, tornado, whatever, or somebody steals all your stuff, you still have a copy safe up on the internet. That's what Carbonite is. My daughter just came home from college. She has her laptop. And I was so happy to see when she turned it on, there's the Carbonite thing popping up. And, you know, I don't even know. She never needed it. I don't know if she was aware of it, but I put it on there before she went, knowing that, you know, if she ever accidentally erased a paper, she would be able to get it back. Carbonite Online Backup will save you from that crash, that virus, that theft, that disaster. But you've got to get it first. So go to carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. You can try it for a couple of weeks. It says 2 free months. Oh, no, I see. You can try it for 2 weeks free and then 2 months free on a 12-month subscription if you use my name, Leo. It's a total of $59 a year for unlimited backup from your internal drive. So that's a lot of backup. It uses your internet access. That's why I want you to try it for free, because it does take a while initially to trickle up that backup. But once it's there, man, you can access it from anywhere, from any computer. Just log onto your Carbonite account, any smartphone app. They have a BlackBerry, Android, Apple, iPad. I just think it's a great service. Try it, will you, for free? 2 weeks. You'll be glad you did. I get it. I got an email the other day saying, thank you. You saved my butt. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. Try it free on a Mac or a PC today. Now let's go to Oxnard and Hugh on the line. Hi, Hugh.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, sir. I have a neighbor that's our tenant that's got a computer. When you turn it on, it screws up my AM radio.
So it gets all buzzy? How do you know it's his computer? You ask him, did you just turn your computer on? And he says, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've stood right beside it and used a battery-operated radio and does the same thing.
That's really interesting. You know, I was a little worried about this. When we got our computer chips into the megahertz range, I thought, you know, they're a little these little things are broadcasting. They're broadcasting. Now, probably not coming through the air. I would guess it's coming through the power grid if it's upstairs or downstairs.
Well, why would it do with a battery-operated radio?
Well, that's weird. It shouldn't make that much. Are you tuning into a very weak signal, or does it do it with everything?
KFI.
Well, that's a powerful signal. That's a 50,000-watt blowtorch.
Yes, sir.
Wow. I think it's RF. And, you know, one thing he could do is wrap his computer in tinfoil. I don't know if he'd like that. There are things called chokes. Like, you know, you choke me, that you can get at Radio Shack, that you put on, and I would recommend this, put on the wires, the USB cables, the power plug. They're little wire wraps that actually absorb RF radiation, and that might help. Okay. I would go to Radio Shack, describe the problem. It's a little weird that his computer is doing that as you're standing next to it. That is a badly designed computer. That's why we get FCCB certification for electronic devices. Every device has got a little thing on the bottom says FCC certified, so it won't interfere.
Right.
I'll tell you what. We have to take a break for local news. Keep listening, Hugh, and I'm going to see if I can find a solution besides putting his computer in a box. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high tech at 8888 Ask Leo. It's 888-827-5536. Toll free from the U.S. Outside the U.S., use your Skype and call. Harlan called right before the break, said, my tenant downstairs turns on his computer and my radio starts going whoosh, whoosh. And I thought, boy, that doesn't sound like the computer's working right. You know, you need to shield it. You need to wrap it in a Faraday cage. You know what a Faraday cage is? Every once in a while, I'll run into a Faraday cage. It's a copper mesh cage that you can put around a room that will block radio frequencies. It'll just block it. So, I think the CIA has some rooms like that. But, he's going to wrap his computer in copper mesh. That might not even do the job. Maybe the interference is coming from the power cables. So it's outside the computer. So good news. Thanks to the chat room. As always, they're amazing. If you Google computer AM radio interference, holy moly, do you find a bunch of stuff. And the very first one is from 2002. And then there's one as recently as 2011. So there are a bunch of them there. Most seem to say that it's the power supply causing the interference. And there are a number of solutions on here. This one is interesting. My computer is causing very bad radio frequency interference with a AM radio station my landlord listens to. This could be Harlan's tenant. Now, this is from 2002. But one of the responses from Crab Cakes, Georgia, says, your problem is almost certainly the satellite coax cable is not properly grounded or grounded, if grounded at all. So apparently he had satellite coax internet. But I think this would be also true to the power cable, if ungrounded power cable. In other words, it's the stuff coming out of the box, probably, that's causing the interference. So replacing cheap, ungrounded cables with grounded, good cables might make a big difference. If they're smaller cables, USB cables and the like, putting a choke on it should make a difference. Chokes are available at Radio Shack. They're inexpensive. They snap right onto the wires. And in fact, sometimes when you buy USB cables, you'll see it. They look like a python with a lump in the middle where the mouse was. It's kind of like that. But instead of it being a python and a mouse, it's a cable with a choke on it. And that's for eliminating or reducing interference, radio interference. Power supplies can cause this problem as well. And I don't know if the FCC is monitoring this or what. If you're getting a hum, that probably is a grounding issue. If you're getting, then it could be the power supply is a switching power supply. And at least according to what I'm reading, that can cause some interference. I would say that the best thing to do is to look at the power cables, replace them with grounded cables, make sure that the grounding, since you are the landlord, Harlan, make sure that the electrical is properly grounded. A lot of times it's not. There are inexpensive devices, again, Radio Shack or any electronics store will sell, to check the polarity of your plugs. Make sure that's correct and that it's properly grounded. Because that could be a problem, too, and that's an easy thing for an electrician to fix. Don't fix it yourself. Or as Web6530 in my chat room says, or just have the building condemned. That might be easier. Mark's in Southern California. Hey, Mark, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hello, Leo. I never thought I would call you, but I just have to give you kudos. You have turned the wasteland of weekend radio into something really interesting.
Oh, you're kind. Thank you.
I used to call it the four C's. There was computers, cooking, cars, and Christ. And you've made...
Hey, I'm not going to mess with Jesus. He's on KFI. And, he's
I know. And I listen to him on Sunday morning, so... You've made it interesting to me because computers are like cars. I turn them on and I want it to work. I don't understand what makes it work,
right.
And I probably never will. But I did want to go back to another C, which is that copyright issue you were talking about.
Right.
I don't know if you know the story, but right after Osama bin Laden went to meet his maker,
mm-hmm.
There was a company that tried to copyright the Navy SEAL six team name for themselves.
Isn't that horrible? I saw that.
And it was, before we give it away, what was really interesting about it was that, about a week or so later, a big press announcement was made that they were in the name of patriotism and blah, 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 blah.
You say a company, but you know what the company was.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saving that for the kid. That's the punchline to all of this. But the punchline was that this company decided to back off on it because it was in patriotism. In fact, they received such blowback from the public over this that the Walt Disney Company backed off of that copyright.
Can you believe it? This is shortly after.
Within days
of SEAL Team 6 taking out Osama bin Laden, Disney files for a copyright on the word SEAL Team 6.
That's right. To be able to put on T-shirts, to be able to put on everything they wanted.
Actually, it's not copyright. It was a trademark. That's important clarification. The Wall Street Journal reported a company spokesman said they've backed off, quote, out of deference to the Navy.
Right.
They were going to trademark toys, TV shows, and more with the word SEAL Team 6 in time for Christmas.
Yep. And so you know, if we want to go into the big H, which is hypocrisy, it's just, to me, it's astonishing. Astonishing.
They also applied for copyright of the terms SEAL Team and Navy SEALs. Of course, the Navy doesn't trademark SEAL Team 6.
They're going to have to now, or somebody will.
Well, guess what? The Navy does have a copyright of the word SEAL.
There you go. And they should. There should be the only one.
That's right. That's like Disney saying, hey, we'd like to trademark the Statue of Liberty. We've got some toys. We'd like to make this unbelievable. Unbelievable.
We'll put Mickey's head on the statue and, you know, whatever. But, I mean, it just, to me, that, yeah, if I'm going to give money to an entity in order to be able to wear a T-shirt that says, I'm proud of SEAL Team 6, it might as well go to the government because Lord knows they need the money.
Shocking, isn't it?
So, anyway, I just thought I'd point that out.
Thank you, Mark. I'm really glad you brought that up. I'd forgotten about that. I mean, from now on, when you look under chutzpah in the dictionary, Walt Disney Company's got to show up there, right? Unbelievable. Let me tell you, real briefly, the difference between copyright and trademark. Copyright's automatic. When you create something, you automatically have a copyright to it. You don't have to put the C in a circle and all rights reserved. It's not a bad idea to add that, but it's not necessary. This show is copyrighted by the very nature of creation. You can abrogate. You can give up your copyright. You can declare something public domain. Or, as I do with all my shows, except for this one's owned by the Premier Radio Networks, and so it's copyright. All the rights thereto belong to them. But every other show I do, I use a license called Creative Commons that is a specific attempt to address this issue of people holding on tight to stuff. So every show I do is licensed, not public domain and not copyrighted, but licensed under a Creative Commons license, which I love, that allows people to reuse it as long as they give me credit. And it's for non-commercial purposes. You can't, you know, take my show and make money off of it, but you can reuse it. You can remix it. You can mash it up. And if you do make a mashup out of my stuff, you need to share it under a Creative Commons license as well so that it pays it forward. I think it's solutions like this that I think are such a great solution. But the idea of copywriting, or I guess it's trademarking, which is you actually have to apply for a trademark, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has to approve it. It's a long process. I have trademarks for the name Twit, which is my podcast network. Yes, I trademarked it long before Twitter existed. Didn't stop them. But You know, I think trademarking Navy SEALs a little much, don't you? Leo Laporte, Deep Tech Guy. No, the Disney Corporation is going to sue us! No difference who you are. When I think your heart desires. That's Jiminy Cricket.
Just in case you're worried, they can't sue us. We pay license fees for all this stuff. If your heart, right, Kyle? In your dream.
Sure.
Sure, he says. I just can't lip sync to it and put it on YouTube. But I can't play too much of it. If I play too much of it, then the Disney Corporation may get angry. 8888 Ask Leo. No, I think we. No, actually, I think the way it works is we pay ASCAP BMI fees, which are fees to the publishers of music for the rights to play the music. And that's what all music stations, and of course, we pay those as well, do for the rights to use music. Although, didn't Rush Limbaugh recently get in trouble with the Pretenders? Because he used their song, Ohio. He uses it for his theme. And I think the Pretenders, I don't know if it was recently, I think the Pretenders got upset about it. And then they worked it out. I'm sure there was some money exchanged hands. 88, so you got to be careful. You got to be careful. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the number if you want to talk about tech or copyright. From Tijuana, Mexico, Walter's on the line. Hi, Walter. Leo here, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
All right, sir. Thank you for the service that you provide. It's invaluable.
Well, thank you. And you listen on over the internet, or?
Actually, I'm not listening. I know your number, and I want to call because I've got an issue with U.S. websites that will block me. For example, I need to download Google Music, and Google wouldn't allow me because it showed my Mexican.
Right. Right. So this is the case in many circumstances, because the music industry or the publishing industry or whoever owns the rights to this stuff doesn't license it for use outside the U.S. So iTunes, for instance, Netflix is only available in Canada, not available in Mexico, so forth and so on.
Uh-huh.
So you can get around it. I think this is where you're leading.
Yeah.
It's kind of illegal.
Anonymizer.
Yeah, exactly. Anonymizer would be one way to do it. Basically, what you're going to use is a proxy server that is located in the U.S. So what happens, in effect, is that you go not directly to the content site, but you go to the proxy in Mexico, which then is like, it's like an underground tunnel leading to the U.S., and your data, your connection emerges in the U.S. on their proxy server, and that's what the content creator sees. They see a U.S. IP address, and they go, he's okay, let him in. And this is a flaw in the geolocation system that they use to figure out where you're coming from. It just doesn't, you know, it won't survive a proxy. You know, I don't know if that's illegal. I think it's probably not illegal, only because it's so technically sophisticated that lawmakers haven't, you know, lawmakers have barely figured out how Twitter works. In fact, in some cases, they haven't. And some very well-known cases. So I don't know if proxy servers are on their radar or not. I imagine they will be at some point. There'd be an additional issue. Well, how do we catch Walter? He's in Mexico. You'd have to have it be against the law in Mexico, or Mexico would have to have an extradition treaty with the U.S. that included such minor things as copyright violation via proxy server. I think you're probably in the clear. There's a negative to doing this, of course, which is that the handoff takes time. So there's some latency. Now, that's not so bad in playing music. Once it gets started, it should be okay. But it's not going to be, for instance, for a Skype call, it's not going to work, because there'll be so much delay that it won't be usable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the websites that works for me in the U.S., I have a residence there as well, is ESPN 360. I can't access it here.
So what you want is a list of public proxy servers.
There's actually a site called publicproxyservers.com, but you could also Google public proxy servers. And what these sites do is they'll say, well, you want a proxy server in the U.S.? Here is the address to point your browser to, and it'll handle it. You'll show up, you know, as coming from the U.S.
All right. That's what I would ask.
Yep.
And one other quick one. I've got redundant backups on my backup external hard drive. And so the files are duplicated. In many cases, I may have three or four to the same document. How can I scan that and find out and get rid of the duplicates?
Oh, well, there are a lot of duplicate file finders that work well on. You're on Windows or Mac?
Mac.
Boy, you know, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think.
I'm on both, actually. I'm transferring from Windows to Mac.
Okay, so you probably want to do it before you transfer. You don't want to transfer all those duplicate files. So if you Google duplicate file finders, there's about a dozen on the Windows side that will do exactly this. What you're looking for, though, is one that will be look pretty deeply within the file to make sure it's a duplicate. File name or creation date or both is not enough, is not sufficient. You want to make sure that the what the best ones do is something called a CRC or a hash. They will take the contents of the file, generate a number based on the contents of the file, and if the file name, the file size, the file date, and the CRC or hash match, then you could be absolutely certain that those are, in fact, exact duplicates, not different versions of the same file, not different songs. You know, sometimes a bad duplicate file finder will confuse the live version of a song with the studio version of a song and delete one or the other. You don't want that. You want both. So a CRC or hash-based file duplicate finder will do the best job on that. Hey, just on the proxy service, you can also use VPNs, and you may have your company, for instance, may have a VPN that would allow you to surf to your company and get online through the company's access, and that would then show up as a U.S. access. Go to My PC can be used that way. There are commercial VPN services. If you do this a lot or you want to have some privacy as you surf, and you may want that in Mexico. I don't know. If you go to a coffee shop with open access, might not be a bad idea to use a VPN. And not merely for the point of view of looking like you come from the U.S., but just to protect, to encrypt your internet access until it gets into the U.S. So there are a lot of ways to do that. Slayer Dork in our chat room is recommending clonespy.com as a good duplicate file finder. It's free. It's for Windows. Clonespy.com. But there are a lot of programs that do this. This is a fairly common problem. But again, you really want to make sure you get one that is looking into the file itself to make sure that it's truly a duplicate so you don't accidentally delete stuff. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's my phone number, 888-827-5536. But even better, don't remember that. Don't waste cycles on that. Just remember the website because that phone number and all the information I talk about is there, and it's easy to find. You don't have to remember it. It's James DeRuvo's writing it down, so you don't have to. That website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. You also find the audio to all of our previous shows and our great chat room. Lots of chatters in there. I mention them from time to time. They're kind of my brain externalized. It's all linked at the website, techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls to come right after this.
Robert C. Baker, way back in the 50s, changed the way children and college kids eat when he invented a way to get bread in to add ear much better to raw chicken.
There he is. The Nugget Man, Robert C. Baker, the man who invented Chicken McNuggets, in a tribute to him from the great Paul and Storm. It gives me great pleasure to play a little Paul and Storm music. Thank you, Kyle. PaulandStorm.com. They are just hysterical. Really talented and funny composers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The phone number, 8888-ASK. Leo, this portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. For high-speed internet at an amazingly low price, call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Steve's on the line.
I'm not sure where he's calling from. Hi, Steve.
Leo, I'm calling from Orange County. Been driving up from San Diego. I'm a content creator with a question about DropCam.
Ah, we use the DropCam, actually.
Well, actually, I was driving up the I-5, and I looked at the Twit Studios, the new Twit Studios.
Yeah.
DropCam there. I saw somebody walking in the background there, evidently working someplace around there this morning.
Right. So the DropCam can be used as a security camera, Wi-Fi camera. I actually have a DropCam in the radio studio, Kyle, somewhere. I don't know if Luis left it behind. We've got to get that working so we can see the engineers and the call screeners. But this DropCam is kind of cool, DropCam.com. What it is, it's not inexpensive. It's, I think, $150 to $180, something like that. But it's a camera that has Wi-Fi built into it. So it effectively becomes its own web server. You just plug it in, and it has some nice features. For an additional fee, it will record on the internet. So you can actually go back in time on the DropCam, which is kind of neat. You do have to pay for that additional service. But you can go back to previous moments, which makes it a very interesting security camera. Axis, the company that makes it, I've used their Wi-Fi cameras for a long time, and I really like them. They have an iPhone app. And it's what's neat is $9 a month per camera, you can have 7 days of rolling storage. It's in effect a DVR that they host.
Well, as I was getting set up, I had a little problem, and their tech guy told me to change my settings in my Mac from WEP to WPA.
Well, that's true.
Why did I need to do that?
I'm not sure why that would affect the DropCam, but it is very good advice for anybody who's on Wi-Fi in general. WEP, which was the original Wi-Fi security encryption technology. You know, if you're on you've got a Wi-Fi access point, a router, and you log into the interface, right on the front page usually, it'll say encrypt or encryption, and it'll give you some choices on the kind of encryption. Older routers had one kind only, this wireless equivalent protocol, wired equivalent protocol, or WEP. Unfortunately, it was poorly designed. The engineers who did the original version of Wi-Fi didn't consult security experts, thought they understood security, and designed a broken protocol. So WEP is fairly easy to crack. This better than nothing. It takes some effort to crack it. You have to have some sophistication to crack it. But WPA is more modern and is not crackable. It's very effective. And, in fact, is probably the single most important thing you can do to a wireless access point is turn on WPA. If you have a choice, I prefer WPA2. Enterprise version if you have a choice. But turning it on your Mac, Steve, meant that you also had to turn it on your access point, right?
No, I just had to go into airport utilities and change it there. It's just that I couldn't.
I see, to log into the DropCam.
To connect the DropCam to the wireless, yeah.
So, yeah, I think the DropCam probably uses WPA, and that's why.
Yeah, I did. And once I changed that setting, then I was fine, and I can go, but I'm just curious why I had to go to WPA2 rather than just WEP.
Well, it's a I'm not sure, but I would guess that's what the DropCam was using. So you have to match whatever the DropCam's using. It may be possible, the DropCam supports WEP, WPA, and WPA2, as well as no encryption at all. Sometimes people want encryption because if you didn't have encryption, somebody driving by could see what was on the camera. So if you're using the camera as a baby monitor or something like that, you really don't want strangers looking at your baby monitor. So turning on encryption is a good idea. The way you turn it on the DropCam, the way you configure the DropCam, as I remember, is you connect it via wired at first, do all the settings, and then disconnect. Is that right?
Yeah, you use the Ethernet cable.
Right. So what the guy was saying is when you set it up, you probably, maybe it's by default, chose WPA, not some other form of encryption, so your Mac had to match. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And by the way, one other copyright issue. I did some work with the Medal of Honor Foundation and Society,
mm-hmm.
and it's interesting that the Electronic Arts has actually copyrighted the words Medal of Honor.
Well, they have a game called Medal of Honor. That's an interesting challenge because, of course, they don't want somebody else to make a game called Medal of Honor. What I would guess is that their trademark, when you specify a trademark, you say the trademark in the field of. And so I would hope that Electronic Arts had the taste, the good taste to say, in the field of video games only.
I don't know.
But you're right. That's kind of creepy, to be honest.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award.
I know.
Given by the United States. There are 84 living Medal of Honor recipients. And to think that a game might have the corner on the copyright is a little bit creepy.
And in fact, probably in poor taste, they probably shouldn't have called the game Medal of Honor in the first place, right?
Yeah, I would think so, because these guys are amazing guys, as are Steel 6. So,
yeah.
Hey, Leo, I love the show and really appreciate the input.
Nobody should mess with the SEALs. Period. I mean, that's just dumb. You don't mess with SEAL Team 6. But I think it is in poor taste now, in hindsight, to name a game Medal of Honor. It's one of the most popular army shooting games out there, along with Battlefield and Call of Duty. But it is, you know, it is kind of a now that I think about it. When you apply for a trademark, you have to choose a code that says what your trademark is in. For instance, I have the trademark, as I mentioned earlier, on Twit. Oddly enough, no one else had attempted to trademark that. But my trademark for Twit is for audio and visual presentations on the internet. I think that's what it is. So somebody could create a Twit toilet paper and get a trademark for Twit in that realm, and it wouldn't, in theory, be a violation of the trademark, because no one's going to get confused. That's one of the reasons Twitter came along, and Twitter did get a trademark on the word Twitter about 5 years after I got mine. But there was never any, you know, we talked, and there really was not a conflict, because Twitter's was for a website. So it wasn't really too confusing. It's a little confusing. The biggest problem I have with that is when I say, oh, yeah, my podcast network, Twit, people say, oh, is that Twitter? And I have to explain no. And then they assume, oh, you named yourself Twit because of Twitter. And that's what we call that reverse confusion, where a company that has a trademark that is kind of stomped on by another bigger company later, then people assume, oh, the bigger company had it first because they're the bigger company, and you're just kind of piggybacking on them. I have learned far more than I care to learn about trademark and copyright, by the way. It's just not worth it. It's just, you know, let's just pick a name. You know, just pick a name. 8888 Ask Leo. Remember Apple fighting with the Beatles? That's right. And Apple, and they got away with that, or they were able to use the word Apple for computers only, and they only got in trouble when they started doing music with iTunes. They had to go back to the Beatles and Apple Corps, the Beatles company, and say, yeah, we promised we'd never use it for music. Can we change that now? They paid them a lot of money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls to come right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking about computers, the internet, hardware and software, home theater too. Back to the phones we go. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. Mike is in Hemet, California. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
Very well. How you doing?
Oh, okay. I have a PS3 that I got probably about a year after launch. It's been working perfectly fine until the last update after they got hacked. And about 4 hours into using it, it got the yellow light of death and shut down.
Ah, that's frustrating.
I got the light of death, it didn't work. I decided I'd try to blow it out with compressed air and see if that would help anything. Now I don't even get the red light, the power light on the front.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Problem with compressed air, sometimes you can knock stuff loose.
It was one of those, the cans, for electronics.
Right. But it's still, there's two problems with compressed air, and there are for electronics, but if you do a long burst, the condensation, you can actually put water into the thing, because what happens is cold coming out of there because it's expanding rapidly, and it can actually condense moisture, so you're supposed to do short blasts, but also it's a pretty powerful blast that can, you know, knock loose things. Obviously, your PS3 is not in good shape. It now is a hardware issue. It is not a software issue. The update may have caused problems, may have caused overheating. There have been, I know there have been problems with, is it 361? Is that the update?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, I know there have been problems with those with that particular update. However, and of course, it's long out of warranty, I would guess.
Yeah.
Is there
any way to fix that, or at least get all the photos and music off of the hard drive?
That's a good question. No idea. Fixing it, I don't know. I mean, I think you have a hardware problem. $150, they're saying in the chat room. Monkey Stick says Sony will charge you $150 to fix it. The hard drive is a different issue. And in fact, if you send it in to get fixed, I would copy the contents of the hard drive before you did that. That means you have to remove the hard drive from the PS3. And I would say do a bit copy of it. It's probably, I'm almost certain that the file system is encrypted, and so it may be that you cannot read it on a PC if you put it into an enclosure or put it into a computer. I don't know if you'll be able to read it directly, but you should be able to make an image of it, because image copiers don't care. They just do a sector-by-sector copy. What to do with it afterwards, I don't know. The chat room's saying, yes, it is encrypted. There is a PS3 backup utility, but of course you can't boot your PS3. So the only way that you could use that would be to go to a friend's PS3 and back it up. What you might do when something like this happens, it's not a bad idea. You know, of course, Sony will take it and you'll bring it to a depot or you'll send it to Sony. But you might be able to find, I don't know about Hemet, but you might be able to find somewhere in an urban area, people who specialize, independent third-party people who specialize in PS3s. And those guys might be able to do, in fact, certainly would be able to do the recovery for you, because they'll have dealt with this before. I think if you want to save that data, if there's data on that hard drive, if you're going to send it to Sony, you're going to have to take that drive out. Absolutely. Absolutely. You're going to want to take it out. Whether you'll be able to get the data off of it might be another matter. That's an interesting challenge. I'm not an expert on that, but I do think the chat room has the handle on it. They say, you know, take out the hard drive, buy an inexpensive replacement, put it in there, send it to Sony, and then you're going to want to look around to find somebody who can help you read that drive. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones in a moment. We've got Ron on the line from Mission Viejo. He wants to get people to sign up for his musicians community website. We'll give you a plug, Ron. I love that. But before we do that, I want to remind you that backup is paramount. as Mike just learned, you got to back up your stuff. Now, I hope you're backing up your drives. But if you're not, I want to tell you about a great company called Carbonite.com. They've been an advertiser on this show since practically day one. I know the CEO, David Friend. He is a friend. I consider him a friend. He's an interesting guy. He started a synthesizer company right out of college you might have heard of called ARP, used by everybody in the business. It was kind of resting on his laurels. His daughter went to college and called him up, said, I lost my paper. I can't get it back. And he thought, there's got to be a better way to back up. And, you know, if you sat down and you said, what would be the best way to back up? You'd think of a couple of things. One, it should be automatic, right? It should just happen. Two, it would be awesome if it would be backing up all the time, you know, just incrementally backing up. But that means you couldn't do it to an external drive. And even that's not a good idea, because if something really, there's a disaster, you'll lose both the computer and the drive. What you really want to do is be using that high-speed internet connection to always back up. Oh, and that's how Carbonite was born. Ever since, I saw the numbers the other day. I mean, it's hundreds of millions of people. Of files have been restored by Carbonite all the time. If you're on vacation this year, you're going to have great pictures for the summer vacation. You're going to want to save. You've probably got baby pictures on your hard drive. Maybe you've got important emails, financial records. I guarantee you there's stuff on your hard drive that's worth a lot to you. Most of it priceless. Carbonite is worth it. $59 a year. You're not going to find a better price anywhere. And that's unlimited backup of the data on your internal drive. So if you got a laptop, it's everything on that laptop that you want to save. Carbonite.com, PC or Mac. You try it free for 15 days. That's my recommendation. Use my name, Leo, when you go to Carbonite.com. If you decide to buy after you use the trial, and I really want you to try it, if you decide to buy afterwards, use my name, Leo, again. You'll get 14 months for the price of 12, and that's a good deal. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right.
with those great people at Carbonite. CARBONITE.com. Ron, Mission Viejo, tell me about your website.
The website's musiciannews.com with one N.
Okay.
It's like a musician's community website for players to find bands and guitarists. And
are you a musician? Is that why you created this? How did this happen?
Yeah, I am. I play keyboards and stuff, and a friend of mine does, you know, he's a drummer, and you know, people are always looking for bass players. And
so this is almost a social network for musicians.
Yeah, it's kind of, you can post your music up there so that people can kind of get an idea, like, what your commitment is and, you know, how you, you know, your songs sound.
Now, are you going to try to make money on this, or is it something you just felt like was needed, or?
Yeah, right now, you know, everything's just free, and
that's awesome.
Like, because a lot of musicians do like open mic nights, and you have to, they don't pay you, but you have to, you know, kind of see how many people you can draw,
right.
And then if you draw enough people, they give you the weekend gig that plays. And so I thought, well, other musicians could see other friends of theirs playing and show up and kind of help them out too to get that, you know, paying gigs and stuff. So.
And you work with SoundCloud, which I know a lot of musicians like and use. In fact, my son puts his music on SoundCloud, so that's nice.
Yeah, I have like a little kind of a basic MP3 player, but it works with the iPad and stuff. And
that's
then, so yeah, you can post your song and your photos and stuff. Because some people just want to play, you know, just kind of weekends, you know, fool around. And some people want to make money and make a career out of it. So it'd be nice for people to kind of find like how committed somebody is before they.
Were you a web designer, or did you go to a designer to do this? I mean, it's got a lot of nice features. You can sign in with Twitter, use Facebook Connect. This is slick.
Yeah, it was like a real slow learning curve. It's a Drupal site, and so I've been spending kind of the good part of the last year just trying to make it all work, you know, but they have those really nice modules that you can plug in. And
I'm a big fan. You know, we use Drupal for our podcast site, and it is a really great open source content management system for people who want to do, you know, heavy duty stuff like this. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, they do. They have, I know you think, oh, I'd like to do this, and you go on there and you find a module, you're like,
right.
Wow, cool.
Right.
Plug that right in. So,
well, nice job. I love this. You've got chat rooms, you've got groups, you've got a blog. You can use it to find musicians, music teachers, local clubs to play, industry contacts, upcoming events. I'm glad to give you a plug for this. This is beautiful. Nice job. Well done.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I know I want to make music teachers kind of a big focus, too, because, you know, you look like on Craigslist, and sometimes you're like, kind of suspicious on
right.
What someone's like, and this way they can post some of their videos and kind of their teaching philosophy, that kind of stuff.
I'm impressed that you put so much effort into this. Good luck. I wish you the best. I'm glad to give you a plug. It's musiciannews.com, just one N, musiciannews.com. And do you focus on Southern California, or is it all over the country?
All over the country. I'd like to get it going. I kind of want to make it, you know, local to each area.
That's a good idea.
People can find someone kind of nearby. Sometimes you find a neighbor you didn't even know play guitar or something right. Like that. And
this is the beauty, yeah. I think, of the modern internet is they call it barrier to entry. It's kind of a fancy way of saying how hard it is for somebody just off the street to create something of value. It's very low. You don't have to have a lot of money. You don't even have to, as you've shown, you can learn it on the fly and make great stuff. So, Ron, congratulations. Well done. Musician News, one N, musiciannews.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. You've got a question, want to talk about high tech? I'd love to talk to you about it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., you could still call me. You just have to use the Skype or something like it to call that toll-free number. Mary Ann's our next caller in Oxnard, California. Thanks for hanging on, Mary Ann. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm at my wit's end, and sadly, it was a short trip.
That's great. Sadly, everybody calls me at their wit's end, so this is what I'm here for. What can I do? What can I do to help?
Well, I have Outlook 2007, and I'm able to receive messages, but I'm not able to send them. They get stuck in the outbox, and there's an error code that says none of the authentication methods supported by this client are supported by your server.
Right. So what it is, it's a configuration issue in your Outlook settings.
Okay.
There's two servers that Outlook or any email client uses, one for incoming mail and one for outgoing mail. It's two different technologies, two different servers, and two different ways of doing it. So they have to be configured for both. The incoming mail, the mail as you're getting your mail, is POP mail, mm-hmm. Post Office Protocol. Sometimes it's IMAP. Outbound mail uses something called SMTP, Simple Mail Transport Protocol. And so your SMTP server configuration is incorrect in the settings. SMTP servers can be set up to work in a variety of different ways. Who are you using for your email, I guess, before we go much farther?
My internet service provider?
Yeah, are you getting it from your ISP? Is that how you're doing it? Or from work? Where's the email coming from? Where's it going to?
Well, it's just my home laptop.
And it's your internet's, and you're using your ISP's email system.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So a couple of things that could be going on here. A lot of ISPs are very worried about spam. They don't want to become a host for spam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the outbound mail. So what if you were a spammer? Well, they might have all different ways of authenticating that it's you and you're allowed to use this outbound email, not somebody posing as you.
Okay.
So that's the authentication method. So sometimes they require you to log in. Sometimes some ISPs check your IP address, see if it's the same as the IP address that the last time was used. There's all sorts of techniques they use. So the trick is going to be, and you know, did you set up your Outlook in the first place?
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the when I remote into my work email on this, and I remote into it through a VPN.
Yeah, that might be different. By the way, this can change without you changing anything because your internet service provider may have suddenly gotten more skittish about spammers and changed how they do outbound mail. So the first thing to do is to check your settings in Outlook for outbound mail, your SMTP settings, and make sure it matches the settings that your ISP specifies. You could log on, you know, who's your ISP?
Time Warner Cable.
So go to the Time Warner Cable site and their support site, and they'll have somewhere how to set up your email client for us.
Okay.
And just go through that and make sure it's done properly.
Okay.
For instance, there's a drop-down that says, what kind of authentication do you want? What's happened is you're trying to do a form of authentication that their server doesn't support. That's what that error message is saying. You're trying to log in, and I don't know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
So you won't be able to send mail. If you cannot get it working,
mm-hmm.
I use Gmail for my outbound mail. I use Google. You don't even – all you need is a Google account to do this, and it'll work anywhere. And that's and one of the advantages of doing that is it just works even if you're, you know, for instance, your ISP settings will only work if you're at home. As soon as you go to a coffee shop, it's not going to work. Or it may not work.
So Gmail is less problematic than...
Yeah, Gmail, you set it up and it works no matter where you are, at home, on the road. Should even work through your VPN.
Do I have to change my email address to do
that? It's just outbound. That's why I explained that complicated, seemingly unnecessary explanation at the beginning that there's an inbound mail server and there's an outbound mail server. The outbound mail server is independent of the inbound mail server. So making changes in the outbound server doesn't affect what mail you get or your address or anything like that.
Oh,
you're basically using Gmail as a service, saying, hey, I'd like to send everything through Gmail if you don't mind.
Oh, okay, and then I just do that through where's the best place to look up how to do that?
If you Google Gmail settings or Gmail SMTP settings, they'll tell you. But I would, you know, you can also Google Time Warner SMTP settings, and they'll find that page very quickly. And just all you have to do is go in your Outlook settings and make sure you've got it set properly. That's all.
All right, I'll recheck that.
Yeah, I'd recheck it. I think that's all that's gone wrong. But remember, depending on how Time Warner works, it may be that when you're not on a Time Warner IP address, that is when you're out at a coffee shop, you may not be able to send mail. Because many ISPs do this, where they say, well, she's not at home. I'm not going to let her send mail. Yeah. See what I'm saying? Because they think you might be a spammer.
Uh-huh.
So let me just look. Actually, Dr. Mom just sent me the Roadrunner settings. Select your provider, Time Warner Cable. Select your state, California. Select your city, Oxnard. All right. We'll just say Southern California in this case and just see. I'm sure they have the same settings everywhere. And then they actually, they make this complicated. Then you have to choose your operating system, browser, email, client. But they'll eventually give you the settings bit by bit. And they'll give you the settings. It just may take a while for you to convince them that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Should be pretty straightforward. That's all that's going on. The email server is saying, huh? Time Warner, it says, requires authentication when you're outside of the Time Warner address, which means if you were at a Starbucks, you'd have to log in with your Time Warner account information. It may be that account information has changed, that password's changed, or there are different kinds of authentication. You may be using TLS when it wants SSL. There's all different ways of doing it. So just make sure those settings match what your ISP said. And if you can't figure out from the website, just call them. And they've done this 100 times. The good news is you're using Outlook. It's very well known. Marcellus, Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey, Marcellus, how are you?
How you doing, man?
Hanging in
there. I got an IBM NetVista old computer. I got blue bottom icons, low virtual memory. I have no control over my cursor, and things open just at random when they get ready. The start menu comes on. Everything is going haywire.
When did you get this NetVista computer?
Ooh-wee. Five, 6 years ago?
Yeah, a long time ago.
I had to order it online.
Yeah. So probably over the 5 or 6 years, it looks like the last time IBM sold NetVista computers might have been more like 9 or 10 years ago. Let me see.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well,
the last one was sold May 2004.
Okay.
So IBM hasn't made computers since they sold the business to Lenovo a year later. So those are pretty old computers. It could be, and it most likely is, that over time it's kind of fallen apart. Not hardware, just software. Could be there's malware on your system. It's an old system. You don't happen to have the original installation disks, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good news. Now, it's going to take you way back in time, probably XP.
My problem is saving what I got on there.
You won't damage anything if you just reinstall Windows. But, yeah, what I would do is, does it have a USB port on that thing? I bet it does.
Yeah.
All right. Might not be a bad idea to take a trip down to Fry's or, a local computer store, buy an external drive. Costco has them. They're not expensive. You won't need a giant one because your hard drive isn't that big to begin with. Buy that drive, plug in the USB, and make a backup of all your data. You do want to do that anyway. You'll find all the stuff that you need in your documents and settings folder. Just back that folder up, and then I would do a fresh install. Wipe the drive, start over. Everything will work better. It'll be faster. But most important, you want to do those Windows updates to get yourself up to spec. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy birthday, Shorty. All right, we'll stop right there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. I know that song too well. We don't want to go past that point.
Thank you.
Kyle's going, thank you. Fade it out now, Kyle. Fade it out. 50 Cent. You know, the new iTunes has this, it's nice, and it's on the iPhone and the iPad too, has this ability to download every song you've ever purchased now on iTunes, which is awesome, except that I never realized how much rap music my kids listen to. And it's all on my account, so you have to be careful about pressing that download all button. You gotta go through those and just check. But finally, you can download, if you've purchased something on iTunes, I don't know what took so long. I guess the fear that the music industry has, that you're just all a bunch of thieves, aren't you? If we let you download it again, you're just going to steal it. But you can now look at all the songs that you've ever purchased on iTunes and re-download it.
They even have a button about, you know, that says all the stuff I've ever bought, all the stuff that's not on this system, which is great because you can look at what you've recently bought, like Dragostea Dente from Disco Zone. I don't know what that is. That's my kids. I know my kids buy a lot of weird stuff. I just won't download that. 8888 Ask Leo, but it's nice that you have the capability. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Oh, we were talking with our last caller who had the old IBM. I just wanted to go through this, in a little bit more slowly. I ran out of time. The process of taking a system that is messed up, that is wrong. It's probably got spyware, malware on it. It's probably infected like crazy. What do you do to get this thing back to normal? It's pretty straightforward. It's just time consuming. You could do it now while you're listening to this show. First thing to do is get your data off of it. Now, there is this issue of, well, is my data infected? If this is the problem, if I have malware on my system, if I've got spyware, is my data safe? And, well, yes and no. Unfortunately, it is possible for data files, JPEGs, PDFs, even MP3s, to be crafted in such a way that they can infect your system, but only when they are viewed or played back with a program that has a bug. Adobe's Reader, for instance, has had such bugs. I think Winamp had a bug that allowed a carefully crafted MP3 to infect your system. But a data file by itself cannot. It only programs can infect your system. Something to be aware of is that Microsoft Office has a programming language in it, and we have seen viruses that are written in that language. So it is possible they call them macro viruses. Those could have macro viruses. But those viruses are safe if you're using a current version of Office, because when you run an infected file in Word or in Excel, Office will say, hey, there's some scripts in here. I don't know how safe they are. I'm not going to run them. And you can say, okay, let's not. If you've got updated versions of all the Adobe products, updated versions of your MP3 players, updated versions of your file viewers, and updated version of Windows, you probably aren't going to get infected by a data file. So I think it's safe, although good to be prudent, but I think it's safe just to back up all your data. Don't back up programs. That's not safe. Just the data files, the document files. You can put those on an external hard drive. You should have been doing it all along anyway. If you've got a Carbonite account, for instance, our sponsor Carbonite, then you don't even have to think about it. You just do the restore. But you got to make sure your data is safe. So I go down to the store, pick up an external drive, and just drag and drop all your files over. Make sure they're all on that hard drive. Maybe even open a few just to make sure they're okay. Okay, good. We're good. Now put that aside. Get your Windows install disks, even if they're really old. It's okay if they're from 2004. Get your Windows install disks, and essentially you're going to wipe that hard drive and reinstall, putting that computer back to the way it was the day it came to you. You may not have those disks. There may be a partition on the drive. You may be expected to make the disks. If you never got any disks and there's no partition, you're going to have to go out and buy a copy of Windows, but you want to start with a CD or a DVD, a known, uninfected, good copy of Windows, and you reinstall. Now, before you do anything else, you'll set up your internet access, but before you go to any sites, the first thing you'll do is you'll run Windows Update, and you will update that guy till there's no more updates to be had. That's really critical, because by going back to 2004, you're going to a version of Windows that has all sorts of flaws in it that have been since fixed. But you're going back before the fixes, so you've got to get all those fixes. On Windows XP, that means downloading Service Pack 3 and then running Update again and making sure there's no critical updates left. You may have to do some rebooting. This may take some time, but now you've got a good copy of Windows, and it's fully patched. It's secure. Turn on the Windows Firewall. If you're not using a router, use a router. Even if it's only one computer on the internet at home, use that router, because it is an intermediate. It's a wall, they call it a firewall, between you and the outside world, and that router is going to protect you. It's important. So use a router, turn on the Windows firewall as well, get all those patches, put your security software on there. You know, our sponsor, Nod32, is a good choice, but you can use Windows Security Essentials, Microsoft Security Essentials, whatever it is, put that security software on there just to make sure you don't get a bug again.
Now you can restore your data. It's probably a good idea to scan your data. You've got an antivirus now on the system. Scan that data disk before you restore it, just to make sure that, you know, there's nothing living in there. And you should be good to go. You'll notice a couple of things. First of all, the computer operates much more quickly. It's as fast as it was the day you got it. Notice I didn't say reinstall all your applications. My recommendation is not to blanket reinstall everything. I would just install applications as you need them. Because one of the reasons your system's got slow, one of the reasons your hard drive is full, is because you've got a lot of stuff you've installed over the years and never uninstalled it. But you may not use it anymore, so don't install it. Just install the stuff as you need it. And it's a good idea to install the new versions. So it's okay if you don't have all the disks. You want it, the latest versions, because as I mentioned, some of these attacks these days come not through Windows, not through exploits in Windows or holes or bugs in Windows, but through holes or bugs in other software more often than not now. So you want to make sure you have the latest version of Adobe Reader, for instance. You want to have the latest version of Adobe Flash. Earlier versions, even as recently as a few months ago, had major security holes in them. And the bad guys know it, and they were attacking that way. So I think that that's the process. It's a good process. It's a good thing to do. I frankly do it every 6 months or so because it just feels good. It just cleans it all out. It's like spring cleaning for your computer. And if you've got a computer, you've had that computer. He's had that IBM computer since 2004. That's 7 years old. You better believe you're going to get a huge benefit from cleaning that up. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We can talk about that. Anything that's on your mind. Love to hear from you. And again, the website, techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find a link to the chat room. Great people in there. Good way to. There's 689 nice folks in there you can ask questions of. And a whole lot more. 8888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
At 7:30.
This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Backup done right. You got to back it up to get it back. So use Carbonite. Try it free for 2 weeks when you use my name, Leo. Mac or PC. Carbonite.com. It's not 3 a.m., but it is the last half hour of the Tech Guy Show. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to get in and ask your question. Maria is on the line from Los Angeles, our next caller. Hi, Maria. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Gosh, thank you so much for taking my call. I have been dying to ask you this. This is what happened, okay?
Okay.
I have a Gmail account, and I was suspicious that someone maybe was going through my emails. I don't know how they could find my password. So I did not change the password, but I added that second step verification code that will send a code
right
to your cell number, you know,
right,
like goes, and then you put back in your Gmail account. And that's what I did. I did
good
that on a Thursday night. I didn't change my password, but I put the second verification code, went through my cell, and I put the number.
Good.
And then I was fine. But the next day was on a Sunday morning. I was doing nothing, you know, not near a computer. And then I got that bling, bling, you know, the text message on my phone. And I was thinking, how could that be?
Busted! You caught him!
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. You think?
Yeah, you caught him. I get this all the time.
There's no way I could get that text on my cell if the guy did not know my password?
It depends. If it's the second factor authentication, I think you have to enter the password and then request the authentication. Is that right? Have you tried it?
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing that Google has where if you've attached, and this is maybe what happened, Maria, if you've attached a cell number, and I do recommend this to your Google accounts, and when you do that, you could say, hey, if I forget my password, send me a text message with it. If you did that, maybe that in adding the second factor authentication to the Gmail account, you also, by virtue of doing that, have now added a phone number to Google. So then somebody who didn't know your password could activate that, and you would get a notice on your text. So read the text carefully. If it is the text for the second factor authentication on your Gmail, then I think you are right. I think, in fact, you had, somebody had your password, and then they ran into that, and they said, oh, and they pressed the button, which was dumb because now they've signaled you. So I would change your password. You know, there's no harm doing it. You were so smart to turn on the second-factor authentication. I think that's really, really great. Google just recently added that. It's the best way to secure something. And in order to explain this, I'll go back a little bit and explain the idea of how security works. Generally speaking, security is through something only you know, a password. But it could be through something you know plus something you have. In order for somebody to crack through that, they'd have to know what you know, your password, and have something only you have. It could be one of those cards that generates one-time passwords. You've maybe seen those, or the little dongles you put on your keychain, or in this case, your cell phone. In order for somebody to get into your Gmail account or your banking account, I use this on my banking too, you'd have to have both. That's called two-factor authentication, something you know and something you have. You can't do it with just one or the other. So by setting this up on Gmail, you're telling Google, look, in order to get my mail, this person would need to have my password and my cell phone. Seems unlikely, right? I mean, if that's happened, well, now you will know it for one thing because you won't have your cell phone anymore. So any site that you really want to lock down, two-factor authentication is a really great thing. In fact, there's a third form of authentication, which is biometric. And if you're going into a very secure, let's say, military facility, they may use all three. They may say, what's the password, sir? You give them the password. They may say, show us your card key. What's the card key number? And you pull out your card key. Or maybe even just swipe it, right? That's something you know, something you have. And then they may do biometric on your fingerprint or your hand card reader, where you put your palm print on there. That's really secure, right? That's three-factor authentication. For most cases, two-factor is sufficient. So, yes, Maria, I think you did the right thing. You turned on second-factor authentication. You got pinged. I would check. I would go to your Gmail. I can't remember, but I think it's the case that you first have to use the password, and then it asks you for the cell phone, you know, says, okay, now I'm going to text you the code. I know it works that way for me on PayPal. I have to have the password first. I know it works that way for me on my bank. I have to have the password first. And then it says, okay, you entered the password correctly, but now what's the code we just sent to your phone? I think that's a very good way to do it. Now, some people don't like all that extra trouble, and it may be that you don't care to secure your email that thoroughly. But if it's something you really want to secure, whether it's your bank account, your email, your nuclear warheads, I think this is a very good idea. Very good idea. I use on my PayPal, I use that to make sure that only I can get into my PayPal account. So, Maria, I think the fact that you got it, if it really was, you know, that secondary code for logging in your Gmail, the fact that you got that means probably, in my opinion, the guy, and you should try it just to see, the guy entered your Gmail password, came up against that, pressed the button, which was dumb of him, and sent you a signal. And by sending you a signal, told you, yeah, I got your password. So change it. I would change your password. Well done. Alex in Dana Point, California. Hi, Alex. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Great fan of your show. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
My question is, I started a website way back before the iPad and the iPhone were popular, and I did it in Flash. And so because I'm doing this on the side, I finally finished it, but I don't have alternate content, so I'm going to work on that. But my question was about Android devices. Are they, I've heard that some of them have Flash, some of them don't, and the ones that do don't really work that well.
That's right. So Flash is something that Steve Jobs, in his infinite wisdom, and he'll be the first to tell you, he's infinitely wise, decided that they didn't want Flash on iPhones or iPads. And they have some good arguments for it. Primarily that it is a pig. It really takes a lot of horsepower. By prohibiting it on the iPhone and the iPad, they actually could change the way the processor was designed so they didn't have to support that and even get better battery life, better processor speed all around. So there are some real advantages to it. Some say it has more to do with the fact that Adobe really ticked Steve Jobs off many years ago when they pulled Adobe Premiere for the Macintosh. It's back on the Mac now, but for many years, you couldn't use Adobe Premiere. You could only use it on Windows. And it's rumored that at the time when that happened, Steve Jobs was so furious that he said, I'll get you, Adobe. I'll never forget, and I'll never forgive. And by the way, that's when Apple went out and bought Final Cut and made Final Cut the premier editor in the world. And you know, knowing Steve, I wouldn't put it past him. That this is still a grudge against Adobe, or maybe it's a bunch of different reasons, including that. In any event, it certainly promoted, I think, a move towards web standards, towards HTML5. You can do everything you can do in Flash you can do with something that isn't owned by a company, that is a standard HTML5. Adobe owns Flash, so it's giving a lot of power to Adobe to make a Flash website. Now, to answer your question, Android phones absolutely support Flash. Here's the problem. Flash is still a pig. So on most cell phones, it requires too many resources to play well. If you use a single processor, single core cell phone, that is anything sold before January of this year, it'll just, Flash won't play very well. It'll work, but the frame rate will be slow and so forth. On the other hand, on the newer tablets and the newer phones, based on the Tegra 2 processor or dual cores, it plays fine. So when you put Flash on a website, you are limiting yourselves in the mobile world to only the newest Android phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We're off to see the wizard. Because
of all the junk he has. Ladies and gentlemen, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I think this is your new theme song. We're off to see the Gizwiz, the wonderful Gizwiz of Giz. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gadget guy. He's the Gizwiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
Very well. How are things with you?
Things are super fine, super good. I'm coming out to see you.
So I know. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that'll be next month?
Yeah, July 21st,
And we should give you a plug, because you're going to be at Comic-Con in San Diego.
I will be at Comic-Con the opening Thursday in the morning. I do a thing called Spotlight on Dick D. Bartolo.
Wow.
Where I'll only talk about you.
Is that because you're actually a comic book?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And then Thursday afternoon, there's a MAD panel. And then Friday morning, I do something with the editors of MAD.
Wow, that's great.
And then
great.
Friday afternoon, I'll be doing something with Tom from Twit. He's coming out there.
That's right. We're going to cover Comic-Con.
Tom and Sarah, I believe, are going out.
Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane, our news division, goes down to the comic book convention. That's a little strange. That's the kind of news we do here. So Dick joins us every week. He does a podcast on the Twit Network. That's my podcast.
Oh, when did that start?
Oh, about 5 years ago.
Yeah, six.
Yeah, it was the Daily Gizwiz, but we decided it'd be easier to do it weekly. So it's not the weekly Daily Gizwiz. And we were doing it right after the radio show, if you want to watch online at live.twit.tv. But I like to bring him in on the show because he gives me $1,000 every time.
Yeah. This is probably my last appearance.
I'm still waiting for that check. No, yeah. I like to bring him on the show because he's always got interesting, useful little gadgets. And what do you got today for us?
Well, today, this is really more for kids who want to borrow their dad's iPhone, or they may have their own iPod Touch. We talked about it a while back on the weekly Daily Gizwiz, but now that it's widely in circulation, the price is dropping. It's from Hasbro, and it's called My 3D. So if you haven't had your fill of 3D movies, it looks like a pair of binoculars, but you stick an iPhone or an iPod Touch, second, third, fourth generation, doesn't matter. And then you download the app on the side or somewhere on your My 3D device will be a code. You enter the code, and you can download right now. I believe there are 6 free apps. So you can watch 3D movie previews. You can watch 3D photos. The 3D photos are amazing. And you can also do some... There you go.
This kind of looks like the old ViewMaster.
Exactly. Leo, this is used to be $35, but now it's down to $25. It's a $25 device that turns a $600 iPhone into a $15 ViewMaster.
You do the math.
We've come. How far?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but it's pretty neat. And the best thing is the one where you're on the beach in L.A. and using the accelerometer as you turn around.
Oh, wow.
You can look out into the ocean.
So the phone is knows how you're pointing and tilting and changes the picture to reflect that.
Exactly. And because of the division in the viewer itself and that you're actually watching two images, it's a very nice 3D device.
That's kind of
neat. Now, you know, I think you're never going to sit there for 2 hours and watch a 3D movie.
Right.
But it's pretty nifty. And now that it's into Target and Walmart, it has came in at $35, but the big box stores now are selling it for $25.
And the price for the apps, do they charge for the apps?
You know what? There's a certain number of apps free. I've not seen any pay apps yet. So my guess is that they'll keep giving them away until they build a base of people who have these and then talk other people into doing 3D apps.
So they could do something for pay. But right now, the apps, there's and there, are there a lot of them?
No, they're not. They started out with, I think there are 7 apps so far.
Well, that's a lot. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hasbro's My 3D, you'll find it at Target, the big box stores, lots of other places.
Yep, under $25.
Dick, always a pleasure. Dick DiBartolo is online at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, GIZWIZ.BIZ. There's lots of Z's in there.
Yeah, there is. And that's what people do when they listen to the show.
You'll find also his What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win a Mad Magazine autographed by Mr. D himself.
Yes.
Gizwiz.biz. Yes. Thanks, Dick. Hang in there. We'll do the weekly Daily Gizwiz in just a few minutes.
I'll be here.
All right. You better. I don't know what we'd do if you didn't show up. Before we get to, we have time for a couple more calls, but I do want to, before we get to the call, talk a little bit about Nods 32. We've been talking about malware. It's almost always a topic of conversation on this show. And you know, you heard me talk about rebuilding your computer. And one of the most important, of course, your behavior is what determines, you know, whether you're going to get infected. But one of the things that will really help is having a good antivirus program on your system. And there is none better than the programs from ESET, ESET.com. There's Nod 32 for Windows. You've heard me talk about it. It's very lightweight, very fast, very efficient. It's the best antivirus out there as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not alone in that. I mean, they just got an editor's choice from, who was it? Now I've forgotten. Well, they just got the, I just saw it somewhere on the editor's choice. Forbes.com said it's the best antivirus that no one has ever heard of it. Well, I hope you've heard of it. The virus, CNET gave them their editor's choice. 5 out of 5 stars. And the Virus Bulletin, which is a very prestigious third-party virus testing company, said that the Nod 32 hasn't missed a virus in the wild in 10 years. That's pretty good. Now the viruses are starting to hit the Mac side. They've got a Mac version too. It's called Cybersecurity for the Mac. From ESET. You've got to get these. Here's the deal. If you want the Mac version, 30 days free at ESET.com/Mac. The Windows version, 30 days free at ESET.com/Leo. Or call 866-935-ESET. And if you're on Facebook, don't forget to go to Facebook.com/ESET USA and like them to stay looped in on contests, special offers, and exclusive content. If you use Windows or Mac, you need ESET. All right, let's see here. I think Alex has been holding on the longest from Dana Point, California. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Leo. I just had another question about optimizing a website for Google. I just finished my website, and I'm trying to get traffic built up into Google, and I was wondering if the name, my website promotes travel to cities in Southern California.
Yeah.
But the name of the cities is not in the name of my site. Would that make a difference?
Google, first of all, getting on Google and highly ranked on Google is job one for any website. That's how people find websites. And they find your website by searching for some keywords. So the first thing I would figure out is what people use to find your site. There's a lot of tools you can use. Google has them too. That will tell you that. What keywords are being used in the searches. And then thinking about what keywords you expect to be used.
So if it is those city names, then yes, you want to make sure you've optimized for the city names. The two most important things for PageRank, that's the Google algorithm for getting you high up on the search results, are how many sites link to you and the quality of those sites, and then anchor tags. This is weird. But it turns out, and Google, you know, realized this, Larry Page, who created PageRank for Google, realized this very early on, the most valuable text on any page is the text that goes, that is a hyperlink, that goes with a hyperlink. You know, you've seen this on a website, you see some text and you click it and it takes you somewhere. Those words are the most important words on your webpage. So that's what Google looks at. They also look at the title of your page. That's important. You can see, in fact, from Google's, they applied for a patent some years ago, and you can see from that patent application exactly what they pay attention to. There's a great site, Buzzle, BUZZLE.com, that has that information on it. Do not pay somebody for this. They call it SEO, search engine optimization. You can do it all yourself. I promise you. Do not pay somebody for this. I actually should pass along, I'll put it in the show notes because I don't remember the link off the top of my head. We're running out of time. But there's a free kind of page of everything you need to know about optimizing yourself for Google. Is it on Lifehacker? I'll find it for you, and I'll put the link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. But the main thing is get people to link to you who have similar sites so your page rank goes up. Put in those anchor tags, put those keywords that you want people to search for. Also put that in the title of the page, it's in those title brackets. And make sure the first 1,500 characters of the page contain real content related to what you want to be searched for. Those things, that's 99.9% of the value. That's it for me, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week.